Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Voices That Cook. I am your host, William Nunn, who is a voice actor who also likes to cook. And on this show, I talk to voice actors who also like to cook, which is basically what you will experience throughout the show, plus maybe some other little fun details and things, because sometimes it goes from the pattern of, like, what's our voice acting background? What's your cooking background? And what are your favorite recipes? And then we will start bouncing around to other stuff. We just go with the flow. We have a good time here. So if you want to enjoy yourself and maybe figure out some really fun options of what to get at the grocery store after this, feel free. But I'm definitely incredibly happy to have a very special guest on today. And I really was very, very overjoyed when you said yes to this. So I'm just still overjoyed that we have Rissa Mee. Is that how you pronounce your last name? I want to make sure I say that correctly.
Rissa Mee.
May. Okay. Yeah. Rissa Mee. Thank you for correcting me. And thank you for coming to Voices That Cook.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm so excited to be here with you. I feel like I know we said this earlier, but it's been a long time coming, and I'm glad that we finally get to e-meet.
This is very true. This is very true. And I can definitely say that you are the first Genshin Impact guest that I have had on the show.
What? I'm so honored, yes. Dude.
Yes. Which, I will say, I do have the game on my PS4. I haven't started it yet because Metroid Dread came out. But ooh. I wanted to make sure that at some point in the future, I will go through that game because I really want to hear your performance and June's performance. I really want to hear both of y'all.
It's a really, really good game, just visually, story-wise. And I mean, you know that the voice actors rock it, but also like the music is amazing in the game. Like, honestly, it's one of my go-to games to just like chill and relax at the end of a really, really long day. I've also got like a huge group of friends on Discord, and we regularly play with each other like once every other night, once every couple of few nights. So it's good. It's really, really good.
That's awesome. Do you do you like to do does the game actually allow for cross platforming, or do y'all use any specific thing to use to play it, like phone, Xbox, PS4?
So it does allow for cross platform, and I believe no. Okay, so they have allowed it for cross platform from the very beginning, but only recently have they allowed the cross-save data. So now I'm able to play like on PC and on mobile as well. But yeah, it's cross-platform. So if you do play, we can all play together. It'll be hella fun. We yes. probably also carry you through some of like the beginning stuff if you'd like. But there's a lot of content in the game. So you can, you know, when you jump on, take your time with it. I know they said that they've got plenty of content to spare, like, you know, releasing the future. So I'm just like, yay. Like, it's already such a huge world, and there's already so much on there. But yeah, so if you've got like friends that are playing like on mobile or on PC, like, you can also play with them too. Like, I tried on PC and I sucked.
I have thought about playing it on mobile as well. I know my computer probably would not be able to sustain it very well, since my computer is only good for playing games that existed back in the early 2000s or older. So it's, though there are some third generation games I think could technically work on it. And of course, if there's any new game that doesn't need a really heavy amount of memory, then I should be all right with my current laptop. It does need to get replaced, which I kind of want to save up to move to Texas. So I may not be able to get a new computer for a while.
Oh,
so
I
gotta
totally
just work with
that.
What I have. So if I were to really go heavy into Genshin Impact, it would be on my PS4 and or my phone, especially if I can transfer the saves and be able to just go from one to the other. And I also really want to play as Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn in Genshin Impact, which that's another reason I've taken immediate interest into it, because I love that game and I love that character. So the fact that you could play as her is wonderful to me.
Yes. Now, the thing is, I don't know if she's still available for players to grab. I believe that she was, I think she was one of Genshin's anniversary gifts, and this was released a couple of weeks ago. So I don't know if they still give her out, but I really, really hope for your sake that they do. Did you play Horizon Zero Dawn?
I did. Actually have not finished the DLC yet. I know a friend of mine will be like, why haven't you finished the DLC yet? And I'm like, it's long. I haven't gone through more of it. I want to give it the, you know, the proper time and attention and all that good stuff, because it is a game that you can explore so much of and just be in awe almost every single second.
It's open world, right?
It is one of my favorite open worlds in all of video games.
Ah, I need to play it. I keep hearing wonderful things about it, and I haven't had the chance. I'm struggling playing Genshin like every other night now.
All good. And while we're on the subject of Genshin Impact, what can you tell me about the character you play as?
So I play as the Divine Priestess for one of the islands on Inazuma, which is a new continent of Genshin that had just recently released within the last couple of months. Her name is Sangonomiya Kokomi, and she's very, very young. She's kind of been thrust into this role of being the island's leader when all she wants to do. She's a huge introvert, and she loves her books. She loves her alone time. She's not entirely sure how to deal with people. And she would rather, you know, deal with military strategy. And as she says it, she loves the art of war. So that's kind of a little bit about her. But, you know, you get to learn all of that and all of the quirkiness in her personality through her story, through the different cutscenes that you see, so it's, yeah. She's super cute. she's an interesting character. She's an interesting character.
Well, I look
with that
forward,
dynamic.
I look forward to meeting her. And when I do, I will let you know. And on top of all that, I'm really amazed at the success that the game has had, and I'm really thrilled that you're a part of it. So very, very many, I'm doing a very quiet applause so it doesn't peek into my mic or anything, but here's the applause that I'm very happy for your success with the game, and I hope that it
not only
continues to grow, but you also get to have more time with that character. In fact, there was another project that you were in that I actually have experienced, that I have gone through, and that is Shadow's House, which is on Funimation for anyone who wants to hear your performance as, Rum and Shirley.
Yeah, as Rum and Shirley.
Yes, that was a show, that's one of those shows where I wanted to watch it mainly because I knew a few people that were in the dub, Marissa Duran, and then I came to know Jordan David Cruz through Kelsey, since he's her boyfriend. And that was definitely a good excuse to start the show. And I was, once the opening theme song started playing, I had a feeling, okay, I'm going to like this show because of the gothic vibe and the lighting and the way the characters are interacting with each other and the mystery of what's going on. And then as we get further in the show, we get to meet Rum and Shirley. And I just, every time Rum was on screen, I wanted to give her a hug.
Oh, I know. And you know what's funny? I feel like every time we had a recording session, at the end of the recording session, I'm always just saying oh my God, our girl needs a hug. Can I give you a hug, Rum?
Can I take you out of the storyboards and just give you a hug. I know they have to get them all the way from Japan, but please bring them here now. Fax them to us. Email them to us.
I know. It's like, girl, you've had a tough day here. Like, let me pull you out of the story. We'll have a little bit of afternoon tea together. you know, just enjoy a little bit of cake and tea and decompress and relax for a little bit. And then if you want to go back to your terrifying setting, you can absolutely do that, but you are not forced to.
You don't have to worry about going through that trial later in the season. You don't have to worry about that.
Oh my goodness. I know. Oh, the poor girl. She's such a sweetie. And, you know, I mean, they all are. Like, I love all the characters. You know, like when you get to know them a little bit more, you're just like, they really do grow on you. And I feel like everyone's character really does play off of each other really, really well. And they've all kind of got this great dynamic that works for them,
mm-hmm.
Which makes it that. And that's what makes it entertaining to watch.
But, it really does.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. I love it. I love the vibe.
So that is the big recommendation to all of you. If you enjoy anime, it's definitely a show I definitely recommend. And I haven't seen any of the other anime that you've voiced for yet, but I would like to check them out at some point. I know you've got quite a few under your bucket right now, which another applause right there.
Thank you.
But there is one particular project that I really also wanted to talk to you about, because I thought, okay, I saw this on here and food is in the title, so I have to listen to this. And
oh, absolutely.
I didn't expect myself to be as emotionally charged as I was just from, I guess I don't know if charge is the right word, but I was definitely emotional listening to it. And that is Mochi Soup for the Soul.
It's Mochi Soup for the Soul.
That was a episode from Life on Pause, I think. I think that's what the podcast is called. And you give a wonderful performance in that, basically doing what would be called a quarantine audio drama.
It is.
It's very it's a very heavy episode, but.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the fact that the story has food recipes and your character is a food blogger, like I had to listen to it, and I'm so glad I did.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I connected with her in so, so many ways. I mean, like you were saying, the fact that she's a food blogger. Funny story, I actually used to be a blogger, and not a food blogger. I used to be more of a fashion blogger. I love Japanese fashion, so I was super into Gyaru for quite some time, and I ran a blog for it for a couple of years, I believe, when I was back in beginning of college-ish, I would say. But, I mean, I do love my food. I super do love my food. I wouldn't consider myself a full-on foodie, but love it enough that, you know, like, there's a lot of food that I feel like ties me to my culture. I'm Chinese Indonesian, so a lot of, you know, Chinese Indonesian food that kind of runs in our family and gets passed down. And yeah, like there's so many parallels happened, you know, while we were recording for this. And it was kind of crazy how everything kind of lined up. Like with the story and with the recording, especially because like at the very end, you know, when she kind of has her breakdown and she finds out that her grandma is terribly, terribly ill, and, you know, it's really bad, you know, like the illness is really, really bad. So she's got this breakdown going on. And during that recording session, I actually lost my grandpa.
Oh, no.
In Indonesia. And it sucked because we were supposed to go over to Indonesia earlier that year to go and check up on him and visit him. But we didn't get a chance to, obviously, because of COVID and travel restrictions. makes sense. We wouldn't want to go there anyways, like with COVID, you know, like we didn't want to carry anything with us.
Fair.
Over to him. But yeah, all of a sudden I, you know, in the middle of recording that episode, I got an army of texts sent over to me. It was just like walls and walls of texts. And I was just like, oh my God, what is going on? Like, this must be really bad. So just kind of out of the corner of my eye, you know how like on your screen, like if you have iMessages open, like in your peripheral, you'll see everything just kind of like show up there. And it was this spam of like, oh my God, hey, are you available to talk? Like something bad has happened. And I was just like it was something that we've all kind of known was going to happen. Like we knew it was coming, but didn't realize it was going to happen so soon. So when it did, and I was recording for that episode, it, you know, that episode just hit so much harder for me. So it's, yeah, really, really crazy.
That isn't remarkable that it happened when it did. Which my absolute condolences on that. But at the same time, I've always had some instances where it can be a struggle to get to those emotional points that really need to hit home in a story like that. It's not
Absolutely.
Easy to go through, but with something like that fresh on your brain and going through it literally during that time, I mean,
yeah,
it makes me wonder, like, did the people involved like message you going, are you okay? Are you all right while recording all that? Cause I know I probably right. would if I were hearing performance like that, where it really sounded like you were crumbling in there. And I was obviously once again want to give you a hug.
And I'll take a virtual hug.
virtual hugs as I
yes
wrap my arms around and pat my shoulders, hoping it's your shoulders. It's a great story that I do think, if any of you would like to listen to it after the show, it's definitely worth your time, and really just is a great example of how talented an actress you are.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Speaking
that was
of
method acting.
Very much method acting.
That was very method.
Speaking of voice acting, or even acting in general, what actually got you started in acting? I'm very curious.
So I started off actually as a singer.
Remarkable singer, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, I started off singing on stage, doing live performances from when I was about 7 years old. And then I joined a couple of like sing and dance groups that toured around Southern California. And I was doing that for a while. And eventually, I think it was one of the sing and dance group instructors had suggested to my mom to go and get me an agent. And I think my mom, so my mom, she was an immigrant. So she visited, blah, 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 blah. So she moved over here when she was in college. So, you know, like, so her English is a little bit, it's kind of limited. So I don't think she quite understood what they meant by like, oh, get your daughter an agent. Mm-hmm. So instead of getting me an agent for music and for singing, she instead got me like a talent agent for a commercial. And that's kind of what set me on the path to acting. So I started acting, I guess on stage from when I was about like 7, 8, 9 years old, like in schools, you know. Mm-hmm. But then after that, like, I think 9 years old was when I first booked my first commercial gig. And then I just kind of had been acting from then on up to this point. So, you know, I kept on with doing the commercial auditions, kept on with doing stage stuff wherever I could. Auditions wherever I could find auditions. And after some time, I took the reins because my mom, she wasn't entirely sure how to navigate the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. And so I took the reins on that, and I ended up, you know, sourcing auditions for myself, getting myself agents, and then trying to get myself out there with not just acting, but with music as well. So, yeah, and then went to college for music. And then after that, after college, I went over to Japan, and then I lived over there for about, how many years now? Oh my gosh. I would say about 6 years on Ooh. And off.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So I, about, well, no, five, because 2019 was our last year there. Mm-hmm. So 5 years on and off. Yeah. And then over there, I was acting for their characters in a couple of their stage shows. So that was super, super fun. And then I came back here and I ended up doing mocap for the Jim Henson Company. And Ooh. That was, yeah. And then that was kind of where I got my start in voice acting, because they were also looking for the voice for this Mandarin speaking tortoise. And I was like, oh, well, I speak some Mandarin. I can speak and understand. So that's great. I can understand, you know, and mimic the motions while the voice actor is doing their thing. And they were like, wait, you really? So you can speak some Mandarin and you understand some? And I was like, yeah. And they ended up casting me for the voice as well. And I was like, oh, holy crap, this is so cool. And yeah, and because I'd done music before, I'd already had all the equipment because I was recording things on my own. I had a YouTube channel. I was part of a couple of like online singing groups. And I collaborated a lot of stuff. I did a lot of, you know, collaboration online. Like, I feel like a lot of us online singers do.
Yes.
But yeah, like I've already amassed a ton of equipment from just doing music. And I had, you know, I'd done videos for YouTube and for music videos that I did with some of my other music groups. And so I was just like, I have all of this stuff and all of this knowledge and all these skills. Why aren't I putting all of them together? Like I had the vocal training, I had the acting, you know, I had the acting experience and some training, and I had the equipment for it. So it wasn't even in that moment that everything clicked. It was about a year later when I watched Word Party on Netflix that I was just like, I really, really liked doing that. Like that was quite enjoyable. And then right about that time, I stumbled upon the Twitter voice acting community, and that was kind of where I'd gotten my start.
Very nice.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess, yeah, so I seriously started last year, but I had my first voice acting gig 2 years ago.
I am very happy for you. That actually feels very interesting on my end, where like, well, obviously you've had much more experience acting in general than I have had. In fact, I don't even know if I've actually mentioned this on the show, and if not, y'all can correct me if I'm wrong, but I actually got started mainly with voice acting from basically working at multiple call centers.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I basically would talk with customers and my coworkers and basically do impressions throughout the day. And
yeah.
Sometimes it would make my coworkers laugh to the point of like they would have trouble talking. And then I would do it for my customers, and just them and my coworkers would be very much, very often just keep telling me over and over again, get into voice acting. Just go do it. You'd be great for it. Just go do it. And when enough people tell you to do something, you eventually give it a whirl. And
you get curious about it.
Oh, yeah. Especially since I had done a report in one of my college classes. It was like a business of cinema class back when I was majoring in cinema studies. Well, that actually, yeah, I think that major became available while I was there at that time. And we had to basically pick a documentary to do a report as if it were like a pitch. And what would I want to pitch the studio, the quote unquote studio, to see about, hey, this is the documentary we're interested in putting together, and here's what would be involved with it, and this is why we think it would be worth the investment. And the documentary I had chosen was I Know That Voice, which was John DiMaggio's his documentary about the world of voice acting that involves a lot of his friends and peers throughout the industry, whether they be voice actors, directors, casting directors, engineers, all these different people. And that was probably another thing that made me interested in voice acting, was seeing behind the curtain how some of that stuff worked from their perspective, especially since I had not too long before that gotten myself reacquainted with Batman the Animated Series for the first time since I was really young. And
oh, nice.
I was like, this show holds up so much more than I remembered it holding up. Like, it's actually much better to watch as an adult than it is as a kid, because the really dark stuff hits a lot harder, especially the Two-Face episode. But what I really...
Oh, man, it's been a hot minute.
it holds up. Most of it does. But what I will say is very interesting about where things started out. So I don't know if I got this far, if I have mentioned this in the show before, but the very first thing I wanted to do, it really happened as a joke. I was making a Star Wars short film. No, I'm not going to share it because it's not finished. And I could probably share it. I could probably share it with my friends if they asked, but I'm not sharing it publicly. For sure.
I feel that.
Yes. But there was some audio I wanted to have done with the actor who was going to play Kylo Ren in the short. And he and I just did like a parody of the... have you seen The Force Awakens?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I'm very behind.
You're good. There's a scene in that movie where the villain and Harrison Ford's character are basically interacting with each other, and they are family. So we just randomly went into it. I don't know how it started, but we just kind of turned a, take off that mask. You don't need it. I want to see the face of my son. And we turned it into a Rick and Morty parody. Just off the cuff, just, hey, Morty, get over here. Oh, I've been waiting for this moment a long time. Take off your mask, Morty. I want to see the face of my grandson, Morty.
Oh, I don't want to do that. I think Jessica really likes the mask that I'm wearing.
I don't give a fuck, Morty. Just take the fucking mask off.
Oh, okay.
That is brilliant. Oh, my God.
It was really funny, and... we were both like, we got really excited over the idea of making Rick and Morty audio dramas together, where I would make an episode and he would make an episode, or at least we would write the scripts. And I was the only one who actually decided to really stick with it, even though it was really bizarre. But that was how I got started. I started out making Rick and Morty audio dramas, which, yes, those are technically publicly available. Y'all are more than welcome to listen to them. I have grown a lot since then.
Oh, my gosh, that's awesome.
But they do exist, and it was a great learning experience on so many levels, from writing, from putting together audio dramas in general, which has been one of my favorite things to do over the last couple of years. And there was a Rick and Morty C-138 Cyberpunk Saga miniseries that was 8 episodes long, and it took me almost 2 years from concept to finishing to complete.
Wow.
It was a long endeavor, but ultimately worth it, just because it gave me that experience to feel like ever since then I've gotten better. I've gotten a lot better, and I've made some people laugh with it, and I also feel that I would not be where I am if it weren't for at least learning from that experience and what I could do to move on, and even maybe want to push myself more into making original content, because I feel like that would probably be more substantial for a long time investing myself into, you know, something, because that was more for fun. And now I wanted to focus on something that would be more fun, but still could be used as a way of something to be added to my resume, which if I wasn't getting work, why not make my own content? And that's stuff to add to my experience there. And
absolutely.
So that's where that all really blew up. And while I was working on the show, I started taking classes taught by Rachel Messer and Steve Bloom. And it just is like, yeah, this is what I want to do.
Yes, I love it. I love it when all of a sudden, like, things just click. And then you're like, you know what? Like, this is it. This is what I needed in my life. This is what's going to make my life a little bit more fulfilling for me. Because, I mean, I feel like it's one of those lines of work that it's not just, it's quite lucrative, but also it's very fulfilling, especially to the creative soul. And for us who, because I feel like you're very much a content creator as well, right? And you love creating things.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of feeds us that extra bit of creativity and allows us to kind of make money off of it. I remember when I used to get sent out like for commercial auditions, because I'm a little person, so I used to get cast for kids' roles, for commercials and stuff. And then I remember when I stopped getting auditions for my age and started getting auditions for younger and younger and younger.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually from like auditioning to kids, as I developed and hit puberty and all mm-hmm. of that, all of a sudden it was like, okay, and now we're going to send you out to auditions where, for like creatures or for suit characters or for like the most recent one that I had for mocap. And I feel like voice acting kind of gives us that freedom to explore what's outside of the confines of our own physicality.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that, because otherwise I would be stuck performing for typecasted little people roles, and it kind of sucks.
I don't doubt
like,
it.
I've seen a lot of content out there that I've chosen not to audition for because they feel really, really derogatory, or, you know, just it's very, very demeaning, and doesn't help our stance in any way, pun totally intended.
But
I feel like, yeah, like voice acting totally gives us that extra bit of creative freedom. And it's nice. It's nice to have that.
You can literally play anybody, no matter their height, which is very, very freeing, not just for your circumstance, but I also feel like it is something where you can really show that with voice acting in general, that we can literally play just about anybody if we have the imagination
Absolutely.
And training to do it. And I could literally imagine you just from this conversation alone. If I never knew how tall you actually were, like, there's so many different things I could imagine you playing right now, just being able to do in front of a microphone, and people could easily
right.
see you in that position. Like, I could literally imagine you either piloting a full-fledged mecha robot or be as tall as a mecha robot. Like, it could work either
Heck
way.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, anyone listening who has an animation studio, let's cast you as a mech piloting pilot, and then you become as tall as them and fight alongside. And
cast
there you
me
go.
As your tallest characters.
Yes.
Let me feel how it feels like to be tall.
I will put that in my notes. I seriously do have notes for some of my friends who I keep thinking about, like, who would they be good to play as? Because I always have projects in mind. And whenever I do, like maybe if I get far along enough in a project, I will think, okay, this character that I'm putting together, Just even thinking just instinctually who could be a good fit. And it's just really fun to think of those possibilities, especially because there's a lot of people I'd love to work with as a content creator. And
yeah,
when I don't want to go through what I honestly am very afraid of doing a public casting call, which is why on a lot of my projects, I've not done a public casting call. I usually just ask people and see if they would fit.
Right.
So at some point, I'll just go ahead and say, like, at some point, I really would love to work with you.
Likewise.
We'll make it happen.
I think that'd be really cool.
We'll make it happen, and I will see what we can do. But until then, I am here to be very, very enthusiastic and happy that you are here still. But also, of course, I now want to ask you, what got you involved in cooking?
Ooh, okay. So I've been cooking since when I was a kid. not super heavy dishes. I honestly, like, my first thing that I've cooked, I think, was instant noodles. Mm-hmm. So not anything super crazy, but I've got a bunch of like amazing cooks in my family, and I am not one of them. I pretend that I am an amazing cook sometimes, and I used some pre-made sauces and stuff to make me feel a little bit better about myself and my cooking.
Hey, we all do it. It's fine. It's sometimes we just go, you know what, I don't want to make the sauce today, I'm just gonna get a can, and it's still good. There's clearly a difference sometimes, but it's still good.
Absolutely. And I feel like, especially since I've been getting a little bit busier, it's been harder for me to pull myself away from my studio and give myself a little bit of time to cook. Honestly, it's quite therapeutic. Cooking's kind of therapeutic, but it's also kind of time consuming. Mm-hmm. It's also been really, really hot. Don't want to cook when it's incredibly hot, because then otherwise I'm sweating into the pot and nobody wants to eat my sweat.
Sweat glands are coming into the pot.
I know, right? They are presenting themselves and making themselves known. They're like, here you go. This is essence of Risa. Nobody wants that.
I would like to imagine that if, depending on how hot the pot is, I would imagine the sweat just evaporates. But I don't know. I've never tasted sweat before, so... We will imagine that maybe it might be an odd thing there. But if nothing else, I would say if you're ever feeling really sweaty while you're trying to make something, just always have a towel on hand, just so that you can at least take care of yourself that way. And maybe even, and this is usually what I will do if it's really hot outside and if I'm making some, which I don't cook outside. But if it's like 90 plus degrees and like maybe the sun mm-hmm. is coming through, I sometimes will, there's a lot of soups I like to do where I don't start out boiling it right away. Because I want to make sure that, let's say I have the protein, like the meat or the beef, and I want to go ahead and chop it up and get it in the pot, especially after it's been cooked already. You know, go ahead and get it in the pot with some oil in it and let it be at a low temperature. And then you can just start to add gradually everything else you need. So that way you don't have to rush yourself. You don't have to worry about anything boiling really fast, so that you can kind of just leave it alone once everything is put in. You've done your stir and you've added your seasonings. Then mm-hmm. you can bring it to a boil, walk away from it, and come back when it's boiling, and then, you know, stir just to make sure nothing sticks, and then just close, put the lid on top and bring it to simmer for as long as you need to, and you don't have to worry about your sweat going in anywhere.
Right? Oh my gosh. That sounds amazing. Yeah, like, I feel like it's less so that I'm worried about my sweat going into the pot, and more so that I just don't like sweating. So I try to just stay away from the heat. But being that it's now the fall season, what's one of your favorite fall dishes to cook?
You saw it earlier.
Oh, was that it?
For those who don't know, I sent you this Well, I had actually talked about this on my previous episode with Kelsey Mayer, but Kelsey Jaffer. I really feel bad that I mispronounced her name. I may have mispronounced it because she has, like, there's multiple ways to pronounce her last name. She's told me this herself.
Okay.
But she's from Chicago, and she is wonderful, as you are too. But I had made minestrone soup last night, which was technically during the recording of episode 10. So I made minestrone soup, which is basically you get like almost 3 pounds worth of ground beef, and you mix it with red wine, and you season it with salt, pepper, and Italian seasoning, and garlic. And what I like to do, because my mom made the suggestion, and I still use it to this very day, is I get one of those spoons that has a bunch of holes in it, and I use it to scoop up the meats. That way, any of the fat and wine mixture that is giving the meat so much flavor, that's what I want to make sure stays in, because I don't want to drain all of the fat and remaining wine that's been mixed into this beautiful collection of flavors. I want to make sure that sticks with the meat. And then once all the meat is in the pot that has oil in it already, then you can go ahead and drain whatever is left out of the skillet into your sink or wherever you would like to dispose it. Especially since probably by then it wouldn't be as hot as it would be, since I would probably turn that skillet off as I'm adding it all in. And then I would add 2 cans of diced tomatoes. I usually like to get them with the basil, garlic, and oregano seasonings already in them. But if that's not available, you can just season the whole thing with garlic, basil, and oregano, which I did that for this one, and it was still really fucking good. And then I had 6 little cans of Campbell's minestrone soup, because I do not know how to make actual minestrone from the way they do it with the cans, but I'm sure there is a way to do it. I just don't know. But if you can get yourself 6 cans of Campbell's minestrone soup, then you can add that in with a spoon, and then add in an entire container of 32 ounces of beef broth, and add in some extra salt and pepper in there, and just stir and let it get to a boil. And once it's boiling, you bring it down to simmer, you put the lid on top, and you let it simmer for 30 minutes. And then you take it off the eye that it's heating up on the stove, and you just let it sit for 5 minutes. And at that point, I would almost say, go ahead and get the soup that you want in your bowl or your cup or whatever you'd like to use it for, and let it rest for at least maybe another few minutes before you even start eating. But at least by then, you can at least add it to your to whatever you want to eat it from, and it will get some. It will get itself a tad bit closer to cooling down. So that way, when you take your first bite, because I know you will want to, of how good it smells, you will have less chance of your mouth burning.
Oh my God, do I know that feeling?
Oh yeah,
I can honestly, the way that you've described the entire cooking process, I can smell it in my brain, and it you're getting me hungry.
It is
It sounds so amazing.
It is a very easy meal to make, and it is definitely one of my favorites. And it's very good for fall, winter, and really, it's also really good if you have a headache. Like I've had feelings that were, they may or may not have been migraines, but when I've had the minestrone soup, I have felt better after having it. And I don't know if it's the wine, I don't know if it's the minestrone itself, I don't know, but
It sounds like you've got a mixture of really, really good stuff in there. And I mean, like, healthy stuff for your body, like minerals. And like you said, the wine always helps, right?
Oh, yes. Red wine specifically. That's what we use for it. So if you're like, what kind of wine to use? Well, we technically use Yellowtail. So that's probably a worthy mention.
Oh, yes. That's Australian, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I have always found it really funny that there is a wine that exists that is called Fat Bastard.
Oh my gosh. Wait, what? I didn't know this.
Yes, there is wine. I'm gonna have to look this up. There is wine called Fat Bastard, and it's actually not bad.
Oh my God. Oh, I see it.
Yep. It is,
is that a hippo on their label?
I think so.
That I think that's so what's funny. On there.
Now, I will say Behringer was my go-to wine for a while. I really like the red Behringer, and there is a version of it that I think has red and white mixed together, and that's not bad, but I am more of a red wine guy. And then there's, gosh, I'm trying to remember what Kelsey Mayer let me drink. I'll have to ask her at some point, but there was a good wine that I had in Texas that she already had, and that was very yummy. We even had sake at one point, and that was very good.
Ah, nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I love me a good sake. I've recently gotten another one of my friends onto umeshu. So it's another Japanese wine, but it's like a plum wine, and it's very, very sweet. Very good.
I have not had that before, but I should try it at some point.
It's called Choya, the brand that we get. They have a version where it's just like the plum just kind of mixed into the rest of the alcohol. And then they also have one where it's like honey, where it's honey infused. And I mean, obviously with the honey infused one, it's a lot sweeter. But I do love the original one. I think the original one is still my favorite. And then there's also, I think like in terms of like red wines, my favorite so far has been the Duckhorn wine. They have some of like the cheaper line, and then they have some of the more expensive line. You can't go wrong with either of them. Like it's all been really, really good for me.
Nice.
But I'm more of a port person.
A what person?
Port wines?
I don't know why. I thought I heard you say porn person.
I love me some porn wine.
That is very, very much what we call the... Now, when they say not safe for work, they instead said not safe for wine.
That is not safe for wine. It would be for an entirely different show.
Oh, yes. The Voices That Drink. Now,
Voices That Drink.
I will say if there was a drinking game I could do for Shadow's House, it would be every time I have to hear Mistress Kate over and over. That would be a very fun drinking game.
Oh my goodness, that would be amazing.
Mistress Kate, drink. Mistress Kate, drink. Mistress Kate.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you would get drunk so quickly.
I would. I've only had one really successful drinking game for a movie that a friend of mine and I decided to do for Predator. It was every time there was a quote unquote noob tube or a grenade launcher that got fired, you'd take a drink.
Yeah.
Every time Arnold said a cheesy one-liner, you took a drink. And whenever someone died, I don't know if we had to finish our drink off, like any of the main characters were to get killed. I doubt we did that, because otherwise we probably would have not been as sober the following morning. But that was really fun. And ever since then, I've always thought to myself, even though I don't drink as much anymore, I still keep thinking about what would be fun drinking games for all sorts of media. And when that kept happening throughout Shadow's House, I kept thinking that would be hilarious. And it makes me want to now ask you, do you think there would be a fun drinking game for any projects that you have worked on?
Oh my God. You know, not that I've ever really thought about it, but let's see. Then again, it's also been a while since I've had like a full on heavy drinking day. The last time I had a full on heavy drinking day, it was in Japan, and did numbers on me. It was really bad. And then now I can't, I can't even smell whiskey now because it's, so what one of our friends did was, I think this was our second night of being back in Japan. I believe it was 2019. Maybe it was 2018. But Jeremy and I had gone back over there for a couple of months for some work. And one of our friends came over bringing like a full bottle of whiskey. And we were like, oh, this is cool. And he was like, yeah, actually, this is kind of like a Franken whiskey. Like I've poured in little bits and pieces of leftover whiskeys from other bottles into this one single bottle and have mixed it all together. Oh, and my. Me not knowing that you probably shouldn't do that at the time. I was just like, you know what? This sounds amazing. You're mixing all of your favorite whiskeys into one bottle. What could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? So we finished that one bottle of whiskey that one night, and it was horrible. I had a very colorful room the day after. It was horrible, and I told myself and then now, like, I can't smell whiskey otherwise that feeling of that, like, sicky feeling comes back, you know, and then I get nauseous all over again. I'm just like, no.
So would you say that you're kind of, would you say that you feel like maybe it would not be a good idea for you to go to a bar ever again, even if you're like, I'm not going to drink anything, you just want to eat food? Would you still be like, no, I can't go in there?
No. I would still go. I would definitely still go.
Okay.
I think at this point, I'm a lot more okay with it. It's only if it's served like right in front of me. I don't have an incredibly sensitive nose where I can like smell it from all the way across the room. And I'm actually kind of grateful for that because I used to have an incredibly sensitive nose and it wasn't fun. Just because most of the time it's not the good smells that you're noticing, but it's the bad ones that you're noticing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I would still go to bars. I just haven't been to one since we got back here. Because we literally... So in 2019, after Japan, I went over to Australia and then, went to go visit Jeremy's family over there. And then from Australia, we came back over here. And I think I was job hunting. And then kind of literally in the middle of job hunting, they closed the country down. And I was like, great, we come back to America and not even a few months later, like, the country's been closed down.
Yep.
So yeah, kind of like the timing was beautiful.
I did not know that Jeremy was from Australia.
Yes, Jeremy's Australian.
That's awesome. And I've always wanted to go to Australia. I've been meaning to pretty much all my life, and at some point I will want to go, especially since I've got a good friend that spent about half a year in the college I went to, and she was an exchange student from Australia, and it would be really fun to see her in person again and just be able to finally explore the good old outback and do all that.
Oh, though, what I part will of Australia? Say,
and I don't know if you've ever had this experience with Jeremy, and please tell me if you have. I took my friend to Outback Steakhouse so that she could finally see what the place was like, and she just kept laughing about almost every single thing there just being so un-Australian. But she enjoyed she enjoyed the food a whole lot. But it was like, nah, this is not us.
That's so funny. I haven't actually taken Jeremy to Outback because I think when he moved over here, we used to have an Outback Steakhouse close to where I live. Mm-hmm. But I believe when he moved over, they closed it down either pretty soon after he moved here or literally like right before. Because I remember going, just like driving by the little restaurant where it was at, and it was just gone. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess Outback is no more. But I wasn't an Outback Steakhouse person. Like, you know, it's always just kind of been around in our area, but I've never really gone there for the food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I should see what Australian restaurants are around and, you know, bring him there, see what he thinks about it and be like, hey, babe, is this authentic Australian food or is this Americanized Australian food?
It is absolutely Americanized, yeah. But good Lord, they have some of my favorite cheese fries on the planet.
Man, when you, if you ever get the chance to go and visit Australia, go for the coffees. Their coffees are amazing. Coffees and their fish and chips. So good.
I love fish and chips. I am honestly not a coffee person.
That's totally fair.
I like tea. I really like tea. But I am both a very big fan of fish and chips. And I also understand why so many voice actors like to drink coffee.
See, I honestly just need it for the energy.
Because there's a lot of tiredness that happens when we do this stuff.
I mean, honestly, it's like sometimes I'm not feeling the coffee, I will say. So I go for my green tea instead of coffee, and that makes for a great pick-me-up.
I like green tea, and I also like Earl Grey. Not just because I'm a fan of Star Trek The Next Generation, everybody. I know y'all got those nerd caps on making me go, yes, I do really love Patrick Stewart and all of his Shakespeare-type acting that he does on the show. And this is Odysseus coming back trying to be Patrick Stewart. You're not Patrick Stewart, Odysseus. I know I'm not, but it is really fun. And the whole engage and make it so and fuck the Borg. That's not what he says. Well, he should. Do you remember The Best of Both Worlds? Of course I do. It's one of the best episodes. Well, he should have said it. But he was going through so much after all that. Well, I guess that's a fair point. But I will tell you this, Odysseus. You need to see The Inner Light. That is probably the best episode of the whole series, in my opinion. Oh, is that one of the sad ones? It kinda is.
My sister will probably appreciate that. She loves Star Trek.
There are, if there's one thing that I've really grown to appreciate as an actor, it has been the obvious bottle episodes that exist within Star Trek, where like they had very, very much a very small budget for a particular episode. Like maybe they were wanting to save some extra, they had maybe some extra money to be sent over to maybe a later episode, like the season finale or something that's going to have a really big action sequence. And so in order to conserve money, they will actually do an episode where the actors will basically be like very much front and center. Maybe it might be just a few of them and they'll be stuck in a room together for a very good portion of the episode, or they might just be in a couple of rooms. And those episodes, especially in Deep Space Nine, my favorite series of the series, by the way, those will feel like you're watching theater in outer space. It really, really does. And if there's one thing that I feel like because I know for certain that there are some properties I grew up enjoying, like Jurassic Park, where I initially watched it because dinosaurs. I love dinosaurs. And if anyone knows anything about dinosaurs that I don't know, I'm going to be mad at them because I was a dinosaur nut back then, to where like the whole life finds a way and is creating or recreating something that's been extinct for so long, is that a morally or ethically good or bad idea? And seeing those debates happening, it's like, I love that they're being all philosophical about this, and there's also dinosaurs in it. I definitely know I would not have appreciated something like Star Trek as much if I were watching it as a kid and then seeing it as an adult and now learning all the stuff that comes with acting and creating and writing, that there's a lot of things that I really feel I appreciate a lot more knowing what it's like to tell a story and being able to put something together that will mean something to you and hopefully to other people. And I guess this leads me to an interesting question for you. Has there ever been a series or maybe even a story in particular that you might not have experienced until you became much more into what you've been doing over the last few years?
So So this is not really to do with, you know, how it connects to acting work, but
sure.
more so that, you know, one of those things where you watched it as a kid and then you've had a completely different experience watching it as an adult. And I believe we spoke about this, something else a little bit earlier on in the podcast, but this was the Hunchback of Notre Dame. And I, out of boredom one day, this was a couple of years ago, the last time that I'd watched it was, you know, childhood. I couldn't remember too much about it, except for the music, because I feel like that usually is, music is usually what sticks to me after watching something. Mm-hmm. Because I've got the memory of a goldfish. But I watched it again in my adulthood, and there were so many themes and so many layers of the movie that I didn't catch, obviously, as a kid, you know, mm-hmm. Like more so the adult themes and, you know, all the darker parts of it that you don't quite catch as a child. And then watching it again, I was like, oh my God, how did I? Obviously, like, I know how I didn't catch it. I was, you know, way too innocent to understand any of it back then. But it was also kind of eye-opening and kind of crazy, and just shows how much rewatch value something actually has, you know? Like, something that you've probably seen as a child and you weren't able to fully appreciate back then, you watch it again now as an adult. Like, it hits different. Mm-hmm. It hits different. Yeah.
You are making me want to rewatch The Hunchback of Notre Dame for the first time since childhood.
Oh my gosh, do it. Do it and let me know how you feel about it.
I will. And that was kind of a similar reaction that I had with the Two-Face episode with in Batman the Animated Series, where, I mean, I knew Harvey's origin. I knew some things were going to happen, but I wasn't anticipating mm-hmm. how Bruce would handle it. Because there was one particular moment where he is reliving the sequence of his failure in a nightmare, and Harvey falls off of a bridge and is asking Bruce, like, why couldn't you save me? And then it just cuts to Bruce's parents, and Thomas Wayne is just like, why couldn't you save us, Bruce? And Bruce just wakes up with a cold sweat all over him. We come right back to sweating. And I was just like, holy shit, they put this in a cartoon back in the early 90s?
Right? Right? That's kind of the reaction that you get. Like, you watch these shows that were, obviously, they were meant for kids. So some of those underlying themes you don't completely catch and understand and fully grasp until you're an adult. And, you know, obviously, you understand a lot more. So you're watching it again and then you're like, oh my gosh, did they actually put that in a kids show and they approved it? Kids were actually watching this?
I mean, I think that was the first show to actually use real guns for a show that would be technically marketed to that young of an audience. So it definitely broke a lot of boundaries at that time, and was definitely something that was very unexpected, but very welcome, because I still think it holds up in so many ways. And for anyone that wants to know, I think my favorite episodes are the ones with Ra's al Ghul. Those were really, really good. There's like a two-parter where Bruce got to go to where they were, and it just put Bruce in such a unique position. He wasn't in Gotham the whole time. He was actually out in the desert and facing off against ninjas and doing all these really cool things that you don't really see him do very often. And also, I just like the idea of Bruce Wayne wielding a sword. It's just fun to me.
Yes.
But I'm also just a really big Dune fan, so that kind of helps too. Anything that makes me think of Dune, I will be happy in my brain, and I can't wait to see the movie next week.
I know. It's pretty crazy. I actually, I've got a friend who sings on one of the tracks there. So she was singing, I think, as lead vocals for one of the trailers. So I really, really want to watch it for that.
If I could poorly demonstrate it, could you point out whether or not it's her?
Yeah.
Okay, because there's a couple of points in the second trailer that came out where there's this woman that's singing, yada de, yada da.
Ooh,
is that her?
I'm not sure. I'll have to listen to it, but I believe it's TJ. I think it's TJ Scruggs. She's a phenomenal singer.
It's either that or it might be the really pretty melody that happens, which I know from the sketchbook is part of the House of Trees music. I haven't listened to the official soundtrack yet because I want to wait till after I have seen the movie to dive into that, because I don't want to listen to the actual in the movie score, because I feel like I'm going to have some of the experience spoiled for me as far as pace and emotions and such, which that kind of happened with me with Godzilla King of the Monsters. But I was so excited to hear Bear McCree do Godzilla themes and such. So I had to listen to it at that time. And I was like, I kind of wish I waited, but it was still amazing to hear that music. And I still think that's the best part of that movie.
Yeah.
But I, if there's any compliment I can give to the soundtrack with what I heard from just the sketchbook version of the soundtrack, which is very much what I would like to imagine Hans Zimmer being a lot more creative with the music and not needing to keep it at a pace that's going to match with scenes and such that you will experience in the movie. But the vocals that are involved, there's a made up language for it in one particular song called Song for the Sisters, which is mainly for the Bene Gesserit. And I swear, there's a couple of moments in the songs that will make probably the average person go, what is going on? This is fascinating. And me, who has read the books and listened to them on Audible, I'm like, I think I know exactly what Hans is doing right there and what he's representing, and that's insane. The fact that I can literally point out this weird thing that sounds like someone's kind of almost like their voice is being this going on that they're kind of muffled with like a I think I know what that is meant to insinuate, which is insane to me. Ooh. That I could pick up a detail like that. And then another song has a particular horrific sounding sequence. And I'm like, I can guarantee you what that music is meant to showcase. And I can see it and it's scary. And that's what it's meant to be. And I can't spoil it. I don't want to spoil it for anyone. But
don't spoil it.
But I'm sure all of you are going to be like, William, what was Dune like when it comes out? I will fucking tell you.
Oh my God.
I will. We have almost a week as of this recording. And by the time this episode's out, I will have seen the movie multiple times and we'll be having watch parties for it in case, you know, anyone Beautiful. Wants to watch it with me on HBO Max. But I am seeing it in IMAX. I'm actually going to a spot where they serve good food there too. So I plan to have Ooh. Dinner and a drink and see the movie at the same time, because if anyone wants to go see Dune and they want to drink something, do not have a beer and do not have a soft drink or water, because they will make you really want to go pee. I have learned this way too often with every single movie experience I have been to. And the last time I saw a movie in a theater with a beverage, I don't remember what the drink was called, but it was a very nice liquor type drink for my for a birthday celebration. And very close friend of mine and I went and saw A Quiet Place Part 2, and I did not need to go to the bathroom at all. I felt very good. In fact, I think having that drink in me made me feel like I could handle the terror a little better.
Definitely do that. It's liquid courage.
It is liquid courage, and I may
it is
need
liquid it, courage,
and I may probably need it to calm myself down while I'm seeing the movie, because I'm still amazed it's real, and I'm still amazed it's coming out. Because it was meant to come out last year, and I was already...
Okay.
I was already just amazed with how it was looking for that first trailer. Like, they are doing the book justice and then some. And the fact that it got pushed back to a year later, almost, it was very upsetting, but understandable. And it's like, okay, y'all can polish, y'all can do reshoots, y'all can do what y'all need to do to make it the best version of the first half of Dune as possible. And yeah. I'm going to stop my Dune tangent because I feel like that's going to take up so much time, other than I hope all of you listening have gotten a chance to see it by now. And if so, let me know what you think of it. There is one more thing I want to know from you before we close out the show, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite recipe?
My current favorite recipe, I believe, would be my chashu pork recipe. And with that one, you marinate the pork in... Oh, all right. So this is one of the ones where I use like a pre-made sauce for it. And I'm going to give you guys a recommendation for the sauce. Let me just look it up really quickly. I think I know... which kind it is. Yes, it is. Okay, so it's the Lee Kum Kee char siu sauce.
Ooh.
That's Lee Kum Kee char siu sauce. I'm not being sponsored for this, but I would love Lee Kum Kee to sponsor me because they've got amazing sauces. But you literally just, you grab your pork ribs and then poke a whole bunch of holes in there. And then you marinate it inside the sauce for about like 8 hours to overnight, and then you take it out of there and either you grill it or you could just bake it in the oven and then turn it up on broil, and then you just crisp the outside of it, comes out and it's like this really, really beautiful, like the outer edges are like super crispy with the sauce, and it's super sugary, and all of that has marinated inside, so it's, you know, it's this candied meat goodness on your plate, and it goes well with so many other things. So that is my current favorite dish.
That sounds remarkable.
Yes.
And I need a link to that. I need to research this and try this myself.
Yeah, I can probably send you a link to the recipe that I use for it.
Oh, please do. And I could put that in the description box as well.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Oh my gosh. That really sounds amazing. And it's been amazing having you on here, Rissa. Thank you so much for joining us on Voices That Cook.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been awesome. It's been nice just hanging out and chatting.
This is true. I'm glad we finally got to make this happen, and we should do this again for sure. Where can the listeners of one, not one shots, where can the listeners of Voices That Cook follow you?
So you guys can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube, and very soon on Twitch. So for the first three, Twitter, Instagram, on YouTube, you'll find me at Love Rissa May. And on Twitch, you guys will be able to find me under Rissa _ May. So I've created it, but I haven't actually done anything on it. I mainly created it to like help mod for other channels. But I guess now I will be using it for signings or, you know, other voice acting events that we have going on where you guys will get to see me live. So, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I will be sure to have those in the description box as well. And for those of you who would like to follow me on social media, you're more than welcome to do so on Instagram at The Voice That Cooks and on Twitter at Voice That Cooks. And in case maybe this episode not only made you hungry or made you feel willing to actually give the recipes that we talked about on the show a try, do let us know if you did and share with us your pictures. We'd love to see them. And of course, thank you so much for listening to the show. And if you're not following it already, please do. And if you're listening to it on a podcast app that lets you review the show, please do leave us a review and let us know what you think of the show so far. And just sincerely, thank you all. Thank you, Rissa, once again for being on the show. This has been a very, very wonderful episode. And I'm just giving up on an outro. If we have an outro later on, we'll get one. So I'm just going to say, for the sake of just not overdoing it, not overthinking it, thank you all once again. I hope that we made you hungry or at least inspired you to want to get something to get at the grocery store. Or maybe even, you know, if you want to do voice acting stuff after hearing this, I applaud you for that too. And also go watch Shadow's House and play Genshin Impact.
Yeah!
And if you want to be like me, read Dune and play Metroid Dread. So,
heck yeah.
Thank you once again, and thank you for listening to Voices That Cook. Good night, good day, whenever you're listening. See you next time.